A dream Formula One debut for Ferrari's Ollie Bearman.
Ferrari's youngest ever Formula One driver is a point scorer at the first attempt.
A tight fight between Mercedes and McLaren.
We've definitely got to make some big changes. In a high speed, we are miles off.
Great teamwork earns points for Haas.
Points on the board, it's always nice in the second race. Good job, everyone.
And a dominant 1-2 for the reigning champions. Welcome to F1 Nation at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix.
Max Verstappen is going to win the opening two Grand Prix of the year. A ninth consecutive win. Max Verstappen, eat, sleep, win, repeat. Verstappen takes the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix to lead home a Red Bull 1-2. An outstanding result for the team.
Welcome to the Jeddah paddock, which is noisy as the teams are packing up after the race. It's me, Tom Clarkson, and I'm joined this week by Alpine reserve driver Jack Doohan, Diego Meyer from Fox Sports in Mexico, and our very own Spanish correspondent, Aston Martin driver ambassador Pedro de la Rosa. I also grab a word with Ferrari performance engineer and the man in charge of their young driver program, Jock Clear. Well, Jack, it was a 1-2 at the front, but can I ask about your former rival, Ollie Bearman, first of all? What did you make of it?
I think, it was a great result by him. It's no easy task, no matter if you're in a Ferrari, to jump in Friday as we are here, but typically on a Saturday morning in for FP3 and going into qualifying and have to perform, because you are required to perform in that car and in that team. And although it is a very fast car, there is added pressure. There's a lot of things that can come into the fact to make you not perform, especially when you're at a circuit like Jeddah. But he did an exceptional job today. It shows that, a rookie in Formula 2 last year, coming into second season, not even in his, finished his second year in Formula 2, and he's ready to be in there in Formula 1. And to be honest, I think it proves that a driver like myself, 2 years in Formula 2 and with quite a lot of mileage in a Formula 1 car, I do feel that it does great justice for myself as well. And I would hopefully like to be in his position, but full time very soon.
Little bit jealous?
For sure I'm jealous. I think, a lot of people, up and down, but, he executed it very well. I think if I wasn't jealous, I'd question what I'm doing here. At the end of the day, he's done a really good job. And, he's got a rest of a season in Formula 2 to finish, but he's set himself up very nicely for, I'm sure, what's to come next.
It also proves, I think, that Formula 2 is a good feeder series for Formula 1.
It certainly does, It's so up and down to say, Formula 2 is so close that a team that gets it right with the driver on its day and a team that doesn't could be 3/10 off. You could be sitting at the tail end of the top 10 or even outside, and that is the difference. Prema with Ollie, he's a top tier and top class driver. They didn't get it right in Bahrain, and they were, P18 and P19 on the grid, and it shows. And they come to Jeddah, he's qualified on pole, a complete contrary to 1 week ago, and then showed that he can jump into Ferrari Formula 1 car and, do very special things as well. So it shows that the caliber of field is very high. It's always been very high. But us young drivers are ready. And these teams, they should take a chance on us.
But also, Jack, you could see from, his first laps in the car in FP3, he was getting after it.
Yeah, no, he was definitely on it. You could see his first lap was getting his eye in. He's not shy to a Formula One car. A few outings with the Ferrari test team and all the and in the FP sessions and rookie test last year. But he's certainly, he's always a driver that pushes it on the limit very quickly. He's had to learn some hard lessons as well from going over it. But he's very very good at that. From what I've seen, he was very quick here last year in Jeddah in his rookie season in Formula 2. I knew he was going to be quick here returning. To be honest, people say it's probably one of the worst places to jump in. But I think for Ollie Bearman, it's probably one of the best, to really show what he could do, because he does really come alive. I feel at the circuit, it was one of his strengths last year. For a slower start for him, he still was running P3 before a mistake, and he qualified on the P2. So it's a really strong circuit for him. And to do what he did in the Ferrari between these walls, I think was a very good job.
And do you think when your moment arrives, do you want 2 months build up, or do you just want to be thrown in at the 11th hour and not have too much time to overthink it?
Yeah, I honestly do not care at all, either one, to be thrown in, to be chucked in with no floaties to see if I sink or swim. I would love it. I look forward to that. If that doesn't happen, I look forward to having that 2-month prep and coming in the car even more ready. Just before quali, whatever it has to be, I would just love the opportunity, really, to be able to showcase that. And whether it's doing something outstanding or doing what the team needs, I want to just show that I'm here to do things right and show what I can do.
Right, Jack, we're going to come back to Ferrari. Let's start the show, really, with the team that dominated the race. Here's what Max Verstappen had to say after his 56th Grand Prix victory.
Yeah, I think it was a very good race. After that first stint with the safety car, we had the box, and I knew that it was going to be a very long stint to the end. But of course, it was the same for most of us. And I think we just managed the pace very well to the end. And yeah, I think the whole weekend the car has been performing really well, probably a little bit better than expected even. And overall, of course, very pleased to win here.
Well, this is your 100th podium. In Formula One, achieved in just 188 starts. That's a very impressive strike rate. Can we just get your reaction to that?
It's 88 missed podiums. So. very happy with that. But I'm not really a guy of, you know, looking at the stats. So I'm just happy to hit 100. But I want to, of course, continue and just focus race by race on achieving the best possible result all the time.
It looked pretty uneventful for Max. Lights to flag. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I made more that Ollie Bearman's father, I think, got more screen time than Max Verstappen during that Grand Prix. It was only, I think, 3 laps to the end where they finally panned back to Max, I think, since lap 2. And when I really questioned, I went, you know, in Formula 2, I looked back and I watched my races and I was thinking, you know, Max, there's no point. Number one, he can watch it on the screens as he's going around. He has enough time to watch it after the race before the others finish. But they're really, you know, he's doing such a stellar job out front with no mistakes, just executing that car to another level, almost a second quicker than his rivals, lap after lap around a circuit like this in Jeddah. He's in a league of his own, and I spoke to quite a few drivers after the race as well, particularly Nico Hülkenberg, who had a 30-second gap to the cars in front, also a big gap to the cars behind, and which was particularly a lonely race for him. And we don't realize that Max is doing that 24 races a year, but he's just in the lead.
Did we learn anything about the Red Bull here? Did anything surprise you about that car? Was there the gap to the first non-Red Bull bigger, smaller than you were expecting?
I think I was quite surprised to find in qualifying how substantial that gap really was that they had over the rest of the field, particularly Max. You know, we saw him 3.5 tenths clear over Checo. I feel like Bahrain, quite low speed, you know, not really taking advantages of potentially how strong that Red Bull car is in the high speed. A driver's circuit, as we come to here in Jeddah, also a lot of confidence is required. And that's just an area that Max is excelling. Being in a car that he's been so comfortable with for so many years now, you know, a circuit that he probably thoroughly enjoys, because I know I do, in the fastest car on the grid, you know, it's going to excel and by a margin.
In Bahrain, he won by 20 seconds. Here he won by 8 seconds. Okay, it was extended when Checo got his unsafe release 5-second penalty. But is that encouraging for us viewers that Checo perhaps is getting closer to him? Or do you think it's track specific because this is actually a Checo style track?
That gap can be a little bit blinding. The gap can not only come down to pure pace, it can come down to, you know, tire management, race management, and a place like Bahrain where it's very heavy degradation, somewhere where, because you're in such low gears all the time, you're high fuel consumption, so a place where lift and coast comes into play quite a lot. It also is typically hot. This year it wasn't, but Max is so good at saving those tires, and with an advantage over the rest of the field, even when I'm out on track watching, I can visibly see that in the way that he manages it. A place like Jeddah, a smoother surface, slightly less grip, the tire isn't isn't degrading unless you're on the soft, anywhere near as much. So it is close to say if you're only 2 to 3 tenths off on pure pace, that can be stayed over the course of the race. That doesn't fall to 3, 4, 5, 6 at some stages when the tire's falling away. But I was seeing in that mid stint of the race on that hard tire, it did seem that Checo was able to keep that gap before, like you said, that 5 seconds, between 6 to 8 seconds. It seemed like at some laps he was able to put a tenth over Max, so it was good. I'm hoping he does get closer because I do want to see some fight. I know they don't really want that, but it'd be great for us all though, just to have someone to give Max and put him on edge just here and there.
So it was back-to-back wins for Max in 2024, and it's also back-to-back P2s for this man.
I had a great start. Unfortunately, I couldn't keep ahead of Charles because he kept it there, and obviously I gave him the space into turn two, and it was his corner then turn four. So that was a good start once again, and from then on I was able to get through Charles, I think within 2 or 3 laps, and then it was looking good the race. You know, I was within, I think, 3 seconds from Max, and I think the degradation on that medium scene was looking quite good, but unfortunately then we were compromised with such an early safety car, and that meant that basically everyone just pitted, and when I was going out, it was actually my mistake because I was told by the team to hold it back. But when I looked at the mirror, there was no one. I saw that I didn't have the proper release, but I didn't saw anyone. So sometimes the team can be a little bit slower than you in the car, but this time was the other way around. So my bad in that one, but still happily didn't change our race.
But final one from me. You've said this weekend that you're happier with the car here in Jeddah. Where is it better compared to last weekend?
Last weekend was really a poor race in terms of how we managed it, the amount of degradation we had, but we understood the reasons behind it, and the race was quite strong today because we were able to make the progress from Friday to the race. But I think qualifying we just went a step backwards, and that's the main key from our weekend, to understand why we went we actually went slower than FP2 when you correct for everything. So something we got to understand the reasons behind it, and make sure that we are able to keep progressing.
Is Checo doing everything required of him to be retained by the team in 2025? He's close enough to Max, getting the points, keeping Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz last weekend at bay.
I think for now he's doing enough. While that Red Bull has that substantial gap over the rest of the field, he's doing enough, and you know, we can see he's trailing potentially between 2 to 4 tenths away from Max. When the field do, and I hope, finally close up on that Red Bull, and that gap closes down to 1 or 2 tenths, you know, taking away whether Max puts a tenth over the car on his perfect day or what, Checo is going to have to close up, and he's going to have to really try and get more out of that Red Bull to really make sure that he's keeping that 1-2, and he's making sure that he's keeping them and the car in the window where he's able to keep a healthy lead in the constructors and do what they want him to do. They don't want him to get too close to Max, but for right now, he's doing what he needs to do.
Well, Jack, this is perfect timing because Diego has joined us as we're talking actually about Checo Perez and the job that he's done this weekend. How impressed were you? You've obviously spoken to him since the race as well.
Yeah, I think he's happy with how he's feeling. He's getting up with the car. His benchmark is the highest, obviously, and Max has done a perfect job. Only has missed the fastest lap today, and on the last lap he tried it. I didn't know if he was going to, but he did. And in the end, Leclerc got him. But I think Checo is happy with how the season has started for him. I think talking to him before the season, he seems to have like switched a little bit his approach on trying to enjoy more this year and look race by race rather than putting himself on the spot like I have to beat Max every weekend, like sometimes he did probably last year and the year before when he was like told he's in the middle of the fight for the championship. I think he's taking a different approach. He knows it's a decisive year for him, but the way he's performing and the way other guys who are supposed to be looking after his seat are performing, I think it's a great start for him.
Jack, as a racing driver, when you accept that you cannot beat your teammate, can you see the pressure coming off Checo in that scenario?
In Formula One, in any form of motorsport, the first rule is to try and beat your teammate because you're an equal machinery and you want to be faster than he is in that same car. So typically, you always have that pressure of coming in. You know, whether you finish on pole or you qualify P15, you want to be in front of your teammate. So to have that pressure now off his back that he can go, okay, I'm going to go out. I'm going to enjoy driving this car. I'm going to make the most of it, try and execute well for myself, but also for the team and bring home what the objective is, which is a 1-2. And he's doing that thus far. So I'm sure, you know, potentially that pressure off his shoulder, he's going to be having a bit more fun, and he might find that over time that gap might get closer and closer because he's not focusing so much and solely on that end goal of beating Max, which could be potentially doing the opposite. He might fall back more in love with the sport and more with what he's doing and find time here and there over the season and find that he gets close.
You know, we can all overthink things, but how does that affect you when you're in the cockpit of a racing car? Do you start overdriving it? And if you do, what does that mean?
You can surely start overdriving, and overdriving is when you're overthinking. Everything is so mental in our sport and in most sports. But overdriving is when you're coming in, you're finding time that isn't there. You're coming into a corner and you're breaking typically the 100 meters. You're coming in trying to break at the 95 and the car's not capable to do that. You're trying to carry 5 km/h kilometers an hour more through a fast high-speed corner of turn 10 where it's not available to do that. And what happens there is the car can't handle it. We're doing speeds of onwards of 300 kilometers an hour in a mid-corner, and these Formula One cars get to a point where they can't handle anymore. They snap, and you have such small time to catch these cars before they're in the wall. And that has big, big consequences, not only on your result on the team, but also on your confidence. You've tried to go on above and beyond to make something work, and it's spat right back in your face. And it takes a lot to brush that, to forget it, and to come back. And that's where you see excellent drivers excel, and the ones who don't struggle a little bit more. And that's just how mental our sport is. And we saw a little bit that, you know, I'd like you to comment a little bit more on it, Diego, of Checo's season in the third quarter of last year, where that snowball effect seemed to start to roll. And he got into this weird, not weird stage, but a difficult circumstance of that 2023 season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think he's told me he's learned a lot of lessons from what happened last year, and this sort of changed approach. Also, in the way he works with his side of the garage, there was, I mean, some talk outside that maybe things weren't working as they should, and he recognized that at some point while trying to beat Max, he was making the car actually slower, like trying to chase something that wasn't right. The car was not going any quicker for him. He realized that after the year, there were no changes on his side of the garage. He has exactly the same people as last year, and that's a vote of confidence for his engineer, for his performance engineer, the persons who are looking after all the electronics, the starts, everything that's so crucial. He's got a very nice bond with them. I think they appreciate Checo's support. And I think that only has probably made him stronger. And I think it's showing, I guess, at the start of this year. Hopefully he can keep it up because it's not going to be easy.
That's the point, isn't it? We actually saw it at the same point last year. The races come thick and fast. And I can see how he got into a spiral last year. He's talked about his visit to a psychologist and the help that he got from that person. And let's just hope he can maintain the consistency.
Yeah, it is difficult. And like you said, when the race is here, we're 24 races in a season now, almost half a year. And sometimes they come at three races in a row. And if you do have that one bad session that results into a bad weekend, you only have 2-3 days max to turn that around. And in between that, you're faced with the whole world and the whole media of Formula One coming at you every way possible. And it's difficult to block that out. But let's hope with this new approach, with him taking a step back, that you know, he's not facing that. He's not trying to attack Max. He's not, you know, facing push from Red Bull. Obviously, if he slips away from finishing a consecutive P2 to Max, then potentially things might start to come in. But as of now, I'm sure he's taking it like we are, race by race, and it's been thus far so good.
I think the lowest point for Checo was around probably Japan. I remember in Japan when he retired after serving the penalty not to get a grid drop in the next race, he was really destroyed. But at the same time, you know, he's a family guy, you know. He's got four children, and I think around the time of the Japanese Grand Prix, her wife was about to give birth to their fourth child. So, I mean, it must be different in any way for a driver who has only to look after, you know, his job. I mean, Max is in a very different situation to Checo in that sense, you know. And Checo is a family guy. I mean, that his family is key to him. And obviously spending so much time away, you know, being in that situation when he's also under pressure, it must not be any easier to manage, you know. Being Max's teammate at Red Bull, being in sort of a fight for maybe being world champion, like he put it at that point, and managing everything, you know. It's a very different context to what Max has to deal with.
Before we move on from Red Bull, I did just want to get your thoughts, Jack, on one of the news stories that's come out this weekend, is that Max did say on the record, if Helmut Marko leaves this team, I will leave with him. Can you get your head around, as a racing driver, potentially walking away from the fastest car? I mean, surely a very hard thing to do.
Certainly. I couldn't see myself doing it, you know.
Because he'd be giving up, surely, in 25, at the rate they're going and the momentum they have. Surely that team is favourite for the World Championship next year.
Exactly. You know, they've been able to do it at the tail end of the regulation before this new car in 2021, really kicking that off. Into now this 2022 to 2026 period, you come in with a strong car like they did. You almost, as long as you keep that flow and that movement going, you almost guarantee yourself four world championships, you know, right there. So it's looking like next year for sure, they're not going to lose a hatful of pace. But we saw Mercedes do that almost twice. And why not Red Bull? You know, with the area they're going into, yes, they're taking on Ford, but it'll be in-house. Maybe it might make them even stronger. So maybe in his position, it's a bit different. You know, three, maybe four world titles down the line, he's like, hey, I want to go do this in a new car, in a new project, but not me.
I've got your phone number. I can pass it on if you
please, please do. Yeah. I think the whole paddock now does.
If you're looking for an easier way to plan and prepare healthy meals that bring a little bit of flavor back into your life and save you time in the process, Factor is exactly what you need. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. And all their meals are fresh, never frozen, and chef-crafted. And they're ready to go in just 2 minutes. All you have to do is heat and eat. There's no mess, no prep. And it doesn't matter what your goals might be or what tickles your taste buds, because you'll find 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons that will keep you fueled up and feeling good all day long. I loved the jalapeno cheddar lime chicken with cauliflower rice. The chicken was really moist, and they've clearly mastered the perfect balance of spice with the jalapenos and melted cheddar cheese. I wouldn't usually go for the cauliflower rice, but it was so tasty and filling, it's almost unbelievable that it's a lower calorie alternative. Factor is entirely flexible to suit your schedule. Just choose as little or as many meals as you need each week, and you can pause or reschedule your deliveries at any time. It's the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking or cleanup required. And it's much less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Head to factormeals.com/nation50 and use the code nation50 to get 50% off. That's code nation50 at factormeals.com/nation50 to get 50% off. Well, look, the reason we've spoken at length about Checo is because as things stand at this point after two races, he is Max's closest challenger. But what about the guys in red?
And it's points on debut for Oliver Bearman. Ferrari's youngest ever Formula One driver is a point scorer at the first attempt. And the last 50 laps have gone a very long way for securing his future. Remember the name? We're going to be hearing Oliver Bearman spoken time and time again.
The call is mega today, so thank you. I really enjoyed it. It was so much fun out there.
Ollie, 18 years old, you've just made your Formula One debut in a Ferrari and you've scored points on top of that. How are you feeling right now?
Destroyed. Physically, it was a really difficult race. Especially at the end when I had the two guys on soft behind me and I had to basically push flat out, and it was mentally difficult race as expected, and then physically I was struggling too. But great fun out there.
Just generally this weekend, how proud are you of your performance, what you've displayed, and how valuable is this, you know, for your career going forward?
Yeah, I think I put a good showing for myself, which is the main thing, right? Difficult circumstances, you know, not a lot of laps on track, but I think we maximized everything today. I felt like I was a bit quicker than Alonso and Russell in front, but not enough to catch. The gap was pretty big. I lost a lot of time trying to overtake Hülkenberg, who... yeah, used his experience to keep me back for a few more laps than he should have. So that's my bad. But no, it was a good race.
You mentioned that you feel destroyed. I mean, how's the neck? And are you expecting a bit of a sore one when you wake up tomorrow?
Yeah, I think I just, especially my lower back and my neck is hurting. You know, these seats take a bit of fine tuning, and this is the first race. We didn't really have time to focus on that. So not the most comfortable, but I'm happy that we finished quickly. And it was a good motivation to finish the race quicker.
Yeah. And just finally, should the opportunity arise, you feel ready to jump back in and do the job again?
You tell me. Did I do enough?
Impressive. Well done, Ollie.
Thanks.
And a man who has a huge amount of experience working with some of the greatest drivers in the last 40 years is Ferrari's senior performance engineer, but also head of their driver development program, Jock Clear.
I couldn't have hoped for a better weekend for Ollie. You know, if you'd written the script, you would have balked a bit at the final result. You'd have said, yeah, let's be realistic. Because if you brought him to a Grand Prix and said 2 weeks ago, you're going to do the Grand Prix in Saudi, mentally he gets prepared for it. We can do some things. We can practice some starts. We can all. But when you drop him in on Friday morning, one free practice session, and then you're into qualifying against the big boys, that's yeah, that's ominous. That's very, very intimidating for anybody. And I think from our point of view, we're just very proud of how well he's integrated with the team, how well the team have supported him. You know, there's so much information available. There's so much work to do in an F1 car. We've kept it simple. You know, Matteo, the chief engineer, was like, from the first get-go, just keep it simple for Ollie. You know, there's lots of information available, but let's not overload him. Let's just let him get up to speed. And, what you see is what we knew he was capable of. But, boy, I didn't expect that under these circumstances.
Can we just get a chronology of it? Because Carlos hasn't been well at any point this weekend in Saudi. Was there any chance that Ollie would have been in from the start?
There possibly was. We saw Carlos Wednesday evening. We were all at the same restaurant. He was happy. He was enjoying a meal at a restaurant. Thursday he came in and said he didn't feel well. He came in late, didn't feel well, but felt up to at least doing free practice one and free practice two. And you know, we've been in this situation before, a bit of a dodgy tummy. If they drive the car, adrenaline takes over, and then in the evening they get better, you know, and we wholly expected Friday he'd be pretty much fit again. Obviously, you know, he'd probably be on the back foot a bit because he wasn't fully up to speed on Thursday. But no, we didn't see any of this coming to the extent where we would have said to Ollie, look, you know, get yourself ready, you're really going to drive this car. Even on Thursday morning, Carlos was ringing and saying, look, I'm coming in, I'll drive and I'll see how I go. So no, I mean, he was probably thinking, oh, please let me drive it. But realistically, it wasn't until Friday morning that it was clear that, OK, now we've got to get him in.
Now, of all the racetracks to make your debut. How difficult is this one in Jeddah?
Well, I mean, it's physically possibly the hardest track on the calendar now, with Zandvoort maybe. These sort of temperatures, I mean, it's evening, but it's still quite high humidity. And it's a circuit he doesn't know very well. I mean, actually, he's done very well here in his F2 career. He was on the front row last year, and he put it on pole in F2 on Thursday here. So it's obviously a circuit he's comfortable with. But yeah, that's a whole different matter when you've got to qualify a car that you don't know very well. Because let's be straight. He's driven a couple of tests with us. He's done some running in Fiorano, but all with old cars. He hasn't driven this car, so this is the first time he's driven this car. And to go out there and qualify it in Saudi, where those walls are quite tight, you know. And we've talked about this ever since we've been coming here. You know, a lot of the seasoned F1 drivers are saying, you know, this track is scary when you know super fast track. And those walls are quite close to you. That's intimidating in itself. And the pressure on him in Q2, obviously, you know, you've sort of locked up on your first set. You've now got a second set to try and get through to Q3. That's when it shows that this is a different level. And that was the point where it got a bit messy. But you know, he did a great job to put it P11 anyway. You know, that was beyond our expectations.
So what about the race then? What impressed you about him in the 50 laps?
Well, I think, and I've often said about Oliver, he will get better and better as the closer he gets to F1, because F1 recognises real intelligence, really thinking drivers that can think their way around situations, really, really shine in F1. And Ollie is super sharp, super clever, and I think that's what he's demonstrated this. As I say, we know he's quick. We've seen him in our car. We know that he can drive a car fast. But the way he's approached the weekend, the way he approached the race, step by step, you know, you've got to get out of the gate, off the grid. You've got to get round turn 1-2 alongside some fairly, you know, fairly feisty opposition who are going to get their elbows out. He did that cleanly. We said if he comes around the first lap with all four wheels still on, we'll be really happy. He did that. He was still in P11, so he held his position off the grid, and then from then on he just grew into the race. And obviously, you have to recognise every lap of the race was another 10% experience for Ollie in this car, you know. So by the time he'd done half the race, he doubled his experience in the race in this car. So he was learning super fast, but he never overstretched himself. And I think that's the thing I'm most proud of from him, is that it's very easy, you know, especially when Charles is a bit ahead of you and you know this car will go quicker, there's a bit more potential, and it's just to overstretch yourself, make a mistake. And those last 10 laps with Norris and with Lando and Lewis bearing down on you with a new set of soft tyres, you think this is where he's just going to lock up into turn one, it's all going to get messy, but he didn't. He just kept the rhythm, he kept going, and actually he got quicker and quicker towards the end of the race, and I think his best lap was on the penultimate lap. So just really a really intelligent drive, and that's what I'm really proud of, because that has always been his strength, and that's going to get better and better, or that's going to pay off more and more as he gets to F1 and he starts to settle into what is an intelligent driver sport.
And has he done enough this weekend to convince you that he's ready for a full-time seat in 25?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I was convinced before that, and I think the fact that Fred was brave enough to put him in this car this weekend under the circumstances speaks volumes for what we've seen of him already. Again, I think this was better than we could have expected, but when the decision was made, I suppose this is what we expected. Do you see what I mean? I don't want to diminish the achievement. We really, really are over the moon with everything, but we sort of put him there thinking, I think he can do this. And he's absolutely vindicated that choice.
Look, Jock, final one from me. You've worked with so many drivers, some of the real greats of the last 35 years. Have you seen a better debut than the one you saw from Behrmann today?
Well, I suppose you would all say that I'm a bit biased, and Jack had won an IndyCar championship when he got in an F1 car, but obviously he put it on pole in Melbourne, and he would have won that race if Adrian hadn't told us to move over and let Damon win.
That's 1996 for people who don't remember.
1996, yeah. But obviously Jack was 26 years old at that time. This guy is 18. So at this stage, having come out of an F2 car at 18 years old, I've never seen anything better than that.
Diego, what a weekend for Ollie Behrmann.
Yeah, I mean, all praise to him. He did a fantastic job. I mean, to be put in that situation, probably Jack knows more about what this would be, but I mean, it's Ferrari. It's not just having one free practice session. It's you're going to make your debut. You'll be the youngest driver ever to make a debut for Ferrari in Formula One. Before that, it was Ricardo Rodriguez, a Mexican, in 1961, Italian Grand Prix. But this was something totally different. I mean, I couldn't think. I guess it was by the rules, the last stance in which he could have made his debut, you know. And probably in some way it was good that he didn't get more, you know, advice, you know, to know. He didn't know with enough time to start thinking about what it would be, you know. He just had to get on with it. And that's basically what he did. And there was, yes, obviously, you would expect at some point that he would make a mistake in Q2. But, I mean, he was 37 thousandths away from putting Lewis Hamilton out of Q3 in his first qualifying in Formula One. I think that's remarkable.
What was the difference in lap time between F2 and F1 around here?
Like 10 seconds?
14 seconds.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In practice, I think it was like 10 seconds. But
yeah, from qualifying qualifying, you're looking at 13 seconds.
Right. Where is that time found in Formula One?
A lot of the time is in the high-speed corners. You know, the low speed, for sure, there is quite a bit. However, the biggest step, and you could sort of see that all weekend, was that sector one. You know, no matter how much time he ended up getting in the car, whether that was, you know, FP3 in qualifying, just knowing how far you can push that Ferrari, which Charles knows and he's found and he's gone over a number of times as well. Ollie's coming in, not wanting to crash the car, pressure from Fred, from the whole team, from, you know, the eyes of the world as well, for this rookie not to come in and crash this car. It's so important. And sector one here being so fast, so on the limit, you know, never fully getting out of the throttle from the exit of turn four before going into turn 13. And just knowing, you know, you come in and you're talking about percentages of lifting, which is the difference between a tenth or two. So very, very difficult on that behalf. You know, we saw he was always very strong in sector two and sector three. Even from his first, you know, first session and first run of FP3, he was on it quite a lot there. But there was still 3 to 4 tenths to always be found in sector one. So the cars are clearly a lot quicker on the straight line. The acceleration, mainly the top speeds, you can differ over 20 to maybe 30 kilometers an hour, but there's some corners you're going around here in a Formula One car at 300 kilometers an hour, which is just insane. And getting your head around that, I think getting his head around from coming from Formula Two and having to deal with two engineers to jumping, you know, your Saturday afternoon and you've got 20 to 30 people coming to you. How was that? What was this? And you're having to debrief, you know, what feels like to the world. So not only you're talking about the car, you're talking about everything else, which, like we said, and you said, Diego, you know, the pressure, it feels like you'd have the weight of everything, and, you know, maybe his career as well, lying on this race. You don't get the natural transition in a way of, all right, you get 3 days of preseason testing. It's like, no, is this kid quick in the F1 car or not? And it was the same to Liam last year, and they both did very well, Ollie as well, in a Ferrari. So yeah, there's night and day difference. He's going to have to adapt very quickly in a week time when they head down to Melbourne, and he jumps back into this car and he'll be thinking, hey, this isn't breaking as quickly as I would hope. But luckily, myself and him, we've experienced that when jumping from FP to qualifying an F2 car very quickly. So this will be a walk in the park for someone like him now.
Is there one aspect of his weekend in the Ferrari, not the F2 pole position, that really impressed you? What stood out?
That he looked like he had been here before at some point. And the way he... I was in the pen after qualifying and the race, and he was probably looking more at what he could have done better than just, you know, taking on everybody's praise that it was a great debut, that he was driver of the day. He was already looking at what he could have been doing better. But at some point, we will see him here again, I guess, sooner rather than later. He's made his mark in Formula One. As Jack very well says, this opportunity can make or break your career. There was more to win from him, basically, but he could have made a big mistake also and not leave a very good impression. But he he didn't make any, really.
One thing that will have taken a hit this weekend is his chance of winning the Formula 2 championship.
Yes, exactly. Not a great first round, as we all know, with Prema himself, whatever it was, struggling in the opening round with both of their cars, being outside of the top 15 in qualifying and two non-score finishes. Fast forward to Jeddah, 4 days later, you're on pole position. It's looking like a great weekend to sort of bounce back from a not-so-great first round. And then you're called up to jump in a Ferrari. So two rounds, I think he can definitely fight back. In that championship, the leader, Zane Maloney, has got a healthy, good 46 points in the bag after two rounds. But not a great weekend for him either, qualifying outside the top 15. So I would like to think, with my nine-round targeted championship that I did last year with not a great first five rounds, I was still optimistic about winning the championship. So I'm sure if him... I know that Prema car will be very quick. I know he'll be very quick. So I'm sure they will be straight back on it and recovering from this loss.
And Ferrari as a whole, they were talking about, tyre deg was good. The pace of the car was good. Is there enough? Have we seen enough from them to think that they actually can beat Red Bull, not now, but down the road, on merit?
At least I think they have a better starting point, I guess, than last year, a better baseline. From what Leclerc has said at different stages in these first two race weekends, sometimes it's depending on which tire they're running, sometimes it's... He says it's hard to switch on the tire, or the way the car behaves makes it difficult to read how to adjust in qualifying, the final adjustment to get that lap time, because he had the speed clearly to be on pole in Bahrain, but didn't put the lap together when it mattered. Here it seems like they weren't that close really to Red Bull. But I think they have a good baseline, I guess. Probably they understand their car more, it seems like, than what's happening behind them with this very tight group of Mercedes, Aston and McLaren. And I think that's what I think would be the positive for their start of the year. But when you look at the competitive picture, it looks very similar to what we had at the end of last year, doesn't it?
I thought it was fascinating, Jack, to see the difference between the Mercedes and the McLaren when we saw Norris and Hamilton running together on track on the same soft tyre at the end of the race, and where Norris was able, to put some distance over Hamilton at the start of the lap.
Yeah, it's always going to be as the trailing car of Lewis Hamilton here. He's always going to lose out in Sector 1. Being close, it's hard to follow. You could see DRS in Sector 2 and Sector 3 helping him, always being able to apply that pressure, but just missing out always in that first sector. Lewis was complaining quite a lot about how they were losing in the high speed, both in the first stint and in the second. So they're clearly not happy with how that car's behaving. I know that's coming due to the bouncing as well, especially due to the curbs that we have here in Jeddah. Instead of a smooth rumble strip, they are a step up and cause the car to bottom out. And what that does is that shockwave effect starts to come, and the car takes a while to recenter. We're talking a while, probably a couple tenths of a second, but that feels like a very long time in Formula One. So it was interesting to see the two, but I'm sure for Mercedes as well, to have two McLarens and one Aston Martin in front of them, and the only other, Aston Martin to be out of the race, I'm sure they won't be too happy with that performance.
Well, Jack, this is an incredible moment, because we've now been joined by we've got our Aussie correspondent, we've got our Colombian correspondent, and our Spanish correspondent has joined us now. Pedro de la Rosa, great to see you.
Thank you.
I tell you, while I've got you, because you're probably dashing off, but very quickly, Oli Behrmann, have you seen a better debut than that?
That was impressive. I mean, I don't remember any debut
as good
as that. I'm thinking
Arrows 1999, there was a guy...
Yeah, but it was planned. There was testing in between. I was adapted to the car. But I know what he went through, because, for example, when in 2011, Checo had this, he was not fit to race in Canada, and I had to step into his car. I jumped into I think it was free practice too, with his seat, with his pedals, with mechanics overalls, you know, just to do the, you know, just get a few laps on the Friday prior to the free practice 3 and quali. And I eventually raced that car, and it was there's so many things that you have to learn in a few hours. You just have to learn. I mean, I had never had a curse system in the, you know, so I had to learn all how to charge the battery, all those things that I was not aware of, because I had never driven a car with curse before. So it was quite complicated. And it just imagine what he had to go through in this weekend, learning all the. It's true that he had driven the car last year, that he had been in the simulator, but even so, there's a huge amount of information that you have to process, adapt, deliver in a track where there's no room for mistakes, you know, because it's mostly 6-7 gears, 250 minimum speed through the first sector. So I'm very impressed, really.
Pedro, so when you joined, we were just talking about Mercedes, McLaren. Jack was very articulate, saying that the second car was always going to lose out through sector one. What did you make of Norris and Hamilton when they were on track together on the soft tire at the end? What do we learn about their cars?
Well, I think that they're very different cars, no? I mean, the McLaren was extremely fast over the first sector. The Mercedes was running a lot less wing, but even so, it was difficult for the Mercedes to overtake. But I think that there was a very low deck around, you know, with a hard tire, and when they mounted the soft tires, everyone was expecting them to fly past everyone, and actually they were not that faster than the hard tire. The reason being is that there was zero deck basically on the hard tire, and although the soft tire was faster, the hard tire hadn't degraded as much, so the differential in speed with the soft tire was not enough for them to just climb back or overtake people easily. It was and also the fact that they were fighting between each other, you know, it just helped. And it's difficult to follow from close distance here at this track, and you overheat your tires. They were soft, so I think they were getting into a personal fight that benefited Berman and the people in front, George and also Fernando. But it was never going to be easy. This is Jeddah. No, I think that we're coming from Bahrain, and everyone was expecting now they're fitting the soft tire and they will climb and they will overtake easily. No, this is Jeddah. Everyone knows track position is much more important than Bahrain. And I think that was key. It was a key element.
But, and just look at Oscar Piastri trying to get past Lewis Hamilton, lap after lap after lap, just couldn't do it. But yeah, I feel you can be very tactical in your defence here. It's quite a good layout for that. Would you agree?
I agree. And sector one being so difficult for the driver behind to follow, it's a stage where I could see K-Mag doing it every lap while he was backing the field up to let Hulk get that gap. And under the entry of turn four, he would lose sometimes up to 6 to 7 tenths just from charging the battery. I don't know if they have an anti-overtake or just a complete big lift off to try and get some more recharge. That's sector one where the following car struggles so much. It's so easy, not so easy, but it is a lot easier to save the battery, you know, not have to push so much, that for the rest of that track, for those long DRS zones, you're able to use that further while the car behind is pushing so much, using more of the tire and using everything they've got to make that overtake.
Plus, I think we saw a very, very nice fight between the McLaren and the Mercedes. But I think we were comparing one of the slowest car on the straight, which was the McLaren, against one of the fastest, which was the Mercedes. So I think it was very difficult for Oscar to get past Luis for many laps. The degradation on the medium tire was also low, and therefore everything was more difficult for them. But it's Jeddah at the end of the day, and as Jack was saying, also there's many strategies to derate your engine, you know, your energy, and use it on areas that you can defend. And I think that everyone was very tactical today.
Look, we've quite rightly heaped praise on Oli Behrmann, but can we just give a shout out to Oscar Piastri as well, and the weekend that he's had, because he out-qualified Lando Norris. He drove a very good race, very controlled race, I thought, today. Are we seeing a slightly different Oscar? Do we feel he's wintered well and reflected on what happened in year one, and has he come back stronger this year?
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, the first moment I noticed it was actually in the driver's briefing in Bahrain. The first year, he sat there quietly. He listened to everything go on. No questions, no real answers, and went on. And Bahrain, all of a sudden, to, you know, arm up. He changed from rookie conserve to second year driver. Now I'm here and I'm bold. I'm coming to do a job. And not that he didn't do that last year, but you can just see the tides have changed a little bit. And it is big. You know, yes, he out-qualified Lando, but Lando's probably thinking, oh, the amount of times I out-qualified my teammate, you know, this one time. But Oscar is very, very fast. And it was around a track like Jeddah, also a very good job. And he did an amazing race as well. Lando tried something a little bit different on the strategy. It didn't work out. You know, made that gap a little bit bigger. But I don't even think with the same strategy, he probably would have been able to beat Oscar anyway. So a great weekend. It's a little bit dim lightened due to Ollie's great weekend as well, but yeah, looking back on it, he did an exceptional job. And I think if you could have came into this weekend saying, all right, Oscar, you're gonna finish P4, he would have said, where do I sign?
I think we will see the real Oscar Piastri this season, because I think he's a driver that has never had time to persevere on the same category. So he's 1 year in Frega, 1 year in Formula 3, 1 year in Formula 2. So now we're going to see finally Oscar on a second year in Formula 1. And I think that's the reason why I think he will be a lot more mature, a lot stronger, and an incredible rival for Lando inside the team, you know, but also a great team player. So, I mean, today, what he did today was impressive, because Cuba took Fernando in the first laps of the race. It's not easy to overtake Fernando. And he did it. He pulled a gap. He had the patience to attack Luis during many laps until he overtook him. And I think that how he managed the race was very, very impressive.
Yeah, I think that only underlines what Pedro was saying, the fact that in his second year we were expecting to see a step in his race performance. We already knew he was quick on one lap. I mean, last year he was in Q3 here already. Lando wasn't. So his speed, he's been there from the go, but he's starting to show all the experience from his first year. And as Pedro well says, I guess we still have to see the best from Oscar, but he needs a car. He needs the McLaren to step a little bit up, to get rid of those weaknesses that go a little bit in line with what were the weaknesses of last year's cars too. So, yeah, I mean, if McLaren can keep up, we'll see great things from Oscar, I'm sure.
And Pedro, with your Aston shirt on, literally, how important is it for the team to have beaten both Mercedes here?
It tells us that we are understanding the car, we are understanding the degradation, we are making moves in improving all our race pace, which is our weakest part of the weekend. And if we carry on doing that, we are closing the gap to Red Bull, you know, which is eventually the last goal. If you look at the difference, where we finished over a minute behind Max in Bahrain, we finished 35 seconds behind Max here in Jeddah. So I think that we've closed the gap, not obviously by 30 seconds, but it is true that we have been able to analyze all the data from Bahrain, make changes in the car setup to improve the car in the race stream, and I think that is important. I think it has been a fantastic race. I think there was nothing left in the car, either in qualifying or the race. How Fernando controlled George to the millisecond of that DRS 1 second gap, you know, that he needed, it was impressive. And Fernando, he drove like a quali lap after quali lap, and he said it was really tiring to have George that close for so many laps, but it was impressive how he did it. And if he did it, it was because it was possible at the end, you know. And I think the team managed to make that step in understanding the car and controlling the tire degradation a lot better.
Fernando said prior to the start of this season that he was going to make a few changes in his preparation. I think he's eating less meat now, things like that. Also, how he was going to interact with the team. Are you seeing the benefits of that? Are we seeing a better Fernando Alonso at the start of 24 than we were seeing at the start of 23?
It's difficult to say better, because I mean, can you be better? I mean, honestly, you know, I mean, better than already what he was doing last year here in Jeddah. But what we can see from Fernando is that he's a lot more integrated in the team. He knows everyone in the team. He knows our tools. He knows the simulator. He knows he's just working for performance daily. You know, he's not adapting. He doesn't need time to know the team. And so I think that we are getting the most out of Fernando just because he's fully integrated to the team. But he was fantastic last year as well. And he's continuing to be fantastic. And today is just an example, you know. I mean, today when the Spanish TV said, what is the headline of the weekend for you? You know, and I said, the headline for me is that Fernando continues to be a beast. Because today what he did, you know, it might have not have been very spectacular to the people. But to manage that gap to George, I mean, the stress that you have to go through the all the walls, the high-speed corners, the change of directions, kissing the wall and still keeping calm, not backing off, I think it was really impressive. Really, I mean, as a driver, I only can take my hat off.
Yeah, and just very quickly, Lance Stroll after his crash, is he okay?
Yeah, he was fine, actually, and he was just disappointed, obviously, about the crash and having to retire. But he was okay. You know, at the end of the day, what we have to be thankful is that having such a big crash, he just jumped out of the car without any issue. Honestly, when I saw the crash, because he had the two wrists operated in last year, and I saw the onboard camera, he doesn't let the steering go. So I thought, wow, careful, you know, because he might have damaged again or, you know, injured his wrist. There, he's fine. And that is the best news from the weekend.
Okay, and Jack, with your Alpine shirt on, literally, it's been a difficult start for the team. Gasly having to retire almost as the race was starting. What is the mood in the camp here, where we're sat?
I think keep fighting. Honestly, we were expecting this. You know, good or bad, we knew it wasn't going to be great.
Were you expecting it to be this bad?
Unfortunately, yes. And it's important to recognize that as well, and not to try and even hope for a little bit more. It's, you know, we did downplay it, and it was as bad as it was. And that is the reality. You know, you can't change that. We have to live with that. We have to understand that. And if we were to lose the mood now, well, it's going to be a long 22 rounds for the rest of the season. So we keep fighting. We know we have upgrades on the way. Everyone's working very well. You know, we want to be in the points, but we finished P13 today, which, you know, is not too bad a result. Yeah, P11 to P20, they all score 0 points, but it's the small wins that we're looking for right now, and that was a small win. For sure, it was, you know, not great to have Pierre out of the race because it's valuable for him to be getting more comfortable with the car, getting more laps, and two cars is twice as much data. But that's how it goes sometimes. It's unfortunate to have a small mechanical issue, but our heads are up. We're looking forward to Melbourne and seeing how we can take another step forward.
Hey, are you looking forward to Melbourne? Because
I am
very much good question.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're going home, but also, aren't you doing something quite cool with your dad?
Yes.
Tell us very quickly.
Driving the B200 Benetton 2000 Formula One car for three sessions over the Grand Prix weekend. One will be a sole practice 25-minute session on Saturday morning, which is probably more practice than I ever got in Formula 2 or Formula 3 on a race weekend. And then two sessions on Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning with my father by my side on a replica 2016 Honda Special Edition MotoGP bike, which will be really, really special. It marks 30 years since his first world championship in 1994, so we'll both have matching 1994 replica helmets of my father, which will be even cooler. But I'm just looking forward to drive an F1 car. It's not a current car, but it's still going to be an F1 car around an
Jack,
F1 track.
If I can interrupt you know that your father, which I am a huge fan because I love motorbikes, he used to race against my cousin Alberto Puig. Because Alberto Puig is called Alberto Puig de la Rosa. So he's he used to be a Honda rider, and he used to race against your father. Your father was world champion, my cousin wasn't, but he won a race in the Spanish Grand Prix in Jerez back in 95.
So that's like winning a world championship.
Yeah,
no,
it was,
in Spain.
It was amazing, yes. It was worth
enough
it.
Said.
Worth all your life to dedicate to that. But anyway, I'm a huge fan, so I just I would love to see you and your father, obviously.
It'll be really
Are you coming to Melbourne?
Yes, I will be there. I'll be there. I love. There's been a lot of years now. I can't remember my last year in Melbourne. Maybe it was 2013 or something like that, 2014. So I'm just looking forward to going back to Melbourne 10 years later. It's a place that I've always been there. Well, the Aussies have been so nice.
And seen the great debut.
Yeah, it was my first debut. You know, in 99, I qualified P18 with the Arrows. I finished P6. Back then,
great
when maybe Jack, you were not even born, maybe, and I got a point, yeah, okay, and I remember having dinner with my wife in the Crown Towers Hotel, yep, at night, and on Sunday evening, and I told my wife, you know, everyone talks about Formula One that it's so difficult and so complicated and so tough, but you know, my first race, I'm P6. It's going to be like Formula 3000. I think it can be easy, you know? How wrong I was, man. I mean, why did I ever say that, you know?
So. It came back and it's looking down on you going, hey, we're going to teach this guy a lesson.
Yes.
And for all Someone the next was generation, listening. That ain't going to be the way.
Someone was listening. I learned a lesson.
Did you whisper? Did you whisper or was it out loud?
No, I was just being... can I say cocky?
Yeah. They're overly confident.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, what a mistake.
Do you remember that 2000 Benetton that Jack's about to drive?
It was the car of Alex Wurz and Fisichella.
Yes, I know it perfectly well. 2000, yeah, they were very quick.
One podium in Monaco, a further three top five finishes. It wasn't the utmost, you know, the strongest car on the grid, but... I'd hop in the worst. I would hop in any car, you know, 1990s, if I have the H pattern, whatever it is, you know, it's going to be paddle shift, 2000, Benetton. I did
but
have the
be
option.
Be careful, because that car was very light. You know, 600 kilos, I mean, nothing to do with... so it's quite a quick car. And I was racing against those cars with Alex and Fisichella. And I remember they were running the SuperTech engine, which was exactly the same engine as my Arrows 2000. And it was an extremely fast car, very good in the corners and the low speed, Monaco, these type of tracks. So
it's interesting that you
be
say
careful,
that.
Man, with your neck.
I will. I'll prepare. But the options that I had for Melbourne were either a 2000 Arrows, driven by yourself,
yes,
or a 2000 Benetton, and the Benetton fitted because it's an Enstone built car. I'm currently, you know, reserve driver for the team Enstone at Alpine here, so it fit. But yeah, I'm looking forward to driving that, and especially being alongside
my
dad.
We are looking forward to seeing you in it. Let's bring it back to today's race, this evening's race. Driver of the day, the fans voted for Oliver Behrmann. Can you each just give me your man? Diego, let's start with you.
No, it's difficult to look beyond him. As Pedro mentioned, Fernando did a great race. There were some great performances, but given the context, I'd go for Oli. I don't know when we will get the chance to see him back in a Formula One car, but the way he performed and how composed he was all weekend long, all 2 days, because he wasn't in the first day, it was really impressive. So yeah, with all the context, it's hard to look beyond him.
I think there were many heroes in this Grand Prix. I mean,
you'd almost convince me about Fernando Alonso, actually.
For me, there are three heroes. I mean, one is Oscar, because what Oscar did today was impressive. How aggressive was, how mature he was at one point. So I thought he drove very well. Fernando, how he controlled George. But I think that my vote has to go to Oli Behrmann, because to be thrown like this, in this track, this type of track, so complicated, where it's so easy to make a mistake, with so limited experience, and with not a lot of laps before qualifying, and doing such a strong race as well, because let's not forget that he did, on his last lap of the race, he did 132.1, which, I mean, Charles did fastest lap 131.6 using DRS as well. So all in all, it was a few tenths between them on the very last lap of a race, which means, I know I'm a bit obsessed about these details, but it's the last lap of a race where this guy that comes from Formula 2 must have his neck completely broken, and he's still hanging in there, pulling a fast lap, you know. So I was very impressed.
43 laps deep on a hard set of tires.
And he had never driven the hard tire ever before. So he was not, he didn't know what to expect from the tire, from the race, from the pit stops, from a start. I mean, there was so many unknowns for him. I only can say that he has my vote. He was really impressed. I was really impressed. And he's 18. So, you know, he's not experienced Formula One test driver like in the past when I was doing it. I've been in that position before, but I cannot complain because I had so much mileage behind me that I was used to it, but he didn't. So, a man to watch.
Guys, I don't really, I just were repeating what you said. There's not much more to say, you know, unless he can race again. To be honest, I agree with your top three, Pedro, you know, Ollie, a standout in the race for sure. He did an exceptional job, and I look forward, to hopefully being with him on the Formula One grid very soon.
But Jack, you know one thing that I really, and I told Felipe Drugovich, who is our reserve here, you know, I told him, because I know how a reserve driver feels, because I've been 10 years a reserve driver, but you always have to feel or believe that it could be you. Next race, Ollie Bearman could be, you could be Ollie Bearman, because things happen. And sometimes reserve drivers forget that these things can happen, and you are tend to relax or just not be as well prepared. Not saying that you are. I mean, I felt it in my own skin, you know. And it's good to believe that these things do happen. And the time they happen, you have to be like fully switched on, because normally the team will always tell you, bring the car back. But as a youngster, you have to always remember that you need to bring the keys back, not necessarily the car, because they will judge you for how for how quick you are. And this is true. Yeah, this is.
And 20 years later, you still have the fastest lap around Bahrain.
Yes. Yes, and you know why I have it? Because Juan Pablo injured his shoulder, yeah? So anyway, I just think that it's a beautiful opportunity for a driver, and the next Grand Prix at your home could be you, you know? So
fingers
crossed. Keep pushing, man. Keep pushing.
Well, and the point we made right at the top of the show, Pedro, is that Ollie Bearman's performance here in Jeddah actually reflects very well on Jack as well.
Absolutely. That's a good point, Tom. That's a very good point. Because I was talking also with Felipe about it, and I said, wow, you know, in free practice 3, his fourth, fifth lap was 130.2 of Bearman, you know, which was like, I thought, my God, this guy, how quick he is. You know, and I told Felipe, he's adapting very fast. And he said, you think all the Formula 2 drivers are bad or what, you know? And he was true. No, I have a huge respect for Formula 2 drivers. It's just that I was shocked. And possibly what I'm shocked is how good this new generation, like you, Jack, of Formula 2 drivers are. How quick they are at adapting. Because one thing is clear is that you don't have time anymore. You are thrown into a free practice session and immediately into a qualifying session. And I think this is just... It's just helping you adapt very fast. You have no time for a next lap, a new set of tires, and this is quite critical in Formula One as well.
Well, I'm going to say, just Ollie Bearman, obviously brilliant, and he deserves our F1 Nation Driver of the Day. There's one person who I also need to mention in dispatches, let's put it that way, is Kevin Magnussen. Not because he lit up the racetrack and did anything spectacular in the true sense of Formula One, but I thought that the team performance he put in for Haas to help Hülkenberg get that P10 was selfless and impressive.
To be honest, I did think about K-Mag and, you know, mentioning himself. He put us in a quite uncomfortable position, being myself, you know, saying Esteban, very tricky, being stuck behind him for a number of laps and, you know, allowing Nico to get that free pit stop. It wasn't so great in the moment, but, you know, looking back on it, he did what was needed to do. He had a 20-second time penalty to his name. That was all that they could do. And to score the team 1 point, you know, Nico said post, he's going to definitely, you know, when he can, repay that favour, whether that's splitting the bonus money or enabling him to do the same again in the near future. But huge team player. It takes a lot as well to accept that and go, hey, okay, I need to think about the big picture here, not about myself scrapping and trying to pull away.
Yeah, I think obviously Jack knew better than us about what to expect, but Haas was in most people's list at the back of the grid before the season started. They've just scored their first point. They had a great qualifying in Bahrain with Nico, so he was able to somehow show some of the improvement that the team has done. Let's see how this changes, because it's only two races, but at least what you mentioned there with Kevin allowing the team to get some reward after all the work they put in on the car.
And let's put some context into it as well, which is what happened between the two RB drivers in Bahrain. They didn't work together, and they probably wouldn't have got points, but I just thought when you look at what happened between Ricciardo and Tsunoda there and what the Haas drivers were doing here, this is a team doing it right and that was a team doing it wrong.
Yeah, I think people will, depending on which side you are, because it was a very late call, probably the situations were quite different. What happened this week with what happened last week. But yeah, definitely you need in those teams where points opportunities are rare to make the most of every opportunity.
So the top 10 looked like this. Max Verstappen took win number 56 of his Formula One career and his second of this 2024 campaign, with his Red Bull teammate Sergio Perez in second and Ferrari's Charles Leclerc third. In fourth, it was Oscar Piastri, with Fernando Alonso fifth, George Russell sixth, rookie Ollie Bearman and a very impressive seventh, Lando Norris eighth, Lewis Hamilton ninth, and Nico Hülkenberg rounding out the top 10 in 10th. In the Drivers' Championship, the top 10 looks like this. Max Verstappen extends his lead at the top to 15 points over his teammate Sergio Perez. Charles Leclerc is third, George Russell fourth, Oscar Piastri now fifth with 16 points, just ahead of Ferrari's Carlos Sainz on 15. Fernando Alonso is seventh, Lando Norris eighth, Lewis Hamilton ninth, and Ollie Bearman, the debutant, 10th with 6 points. In the Constructors' Championship, Red Bull Racing extend even further to 87 points, with Ferrari second on 49, McLaren a third on 28, Mercedes fourth on 26, Aston Martin fifth on 13, and Haas sixth with just 1 point. Williams, Sauber, RB and Alpine have yet to score. Now, Jeddah also marked the first weekend of the F1 Academy season. Mercedes driver Dorian Pan won both races, but she lost her second victory after receiving a penalty for taking the checkered flag twice. That promoted Alpine's Abby Pulling to P1 for race two. But before that penalty was issued, I caught up with F1 Academy managing director Susie Wolf in the paddock to see what she made of the opening weekend.
First and foremost, the support from within this paddock. I knew it was key for us to race with F1 for the exposure, because we've got a whole next generation that we need to inspire, getting the F1 teams on board. But just how much people have really got behind us, the momentum we've been able to generate just on this first weekend alone has really been so encouraging, and I'm so thankful, because it's not just a project for me to take on with my team. It's something that I really believe can not just add value to Formula One, but have a positive impact.
Now, for people listening who don't understand, this is year two of F1 Academy. What is different this year over what we had in 23?
Well, I really see this as my year one, because this is my vision of what I felt we had to be. We raced with Formula One on seven weekends over three different continents, and it was important to have that really global calendar, because we need to generate talent in all the different regions. So it was important to be seen globally and not just regionally. And then getting the Formula One teams on board was key for us, because not only do we have those drivers getting supported by the teams, but the teams also looking for younger talent that they can bring up and support. And the visibility that the teams are able to bring to the championship is something which is hugely beneficial for us, because the fan base that the Formula One teams has is huge, and by them supporting their nominated drivers, it just means our exposure is much bigger. And I keep going back to this word exposure, but I have the challenge of finding drivers, finding enough drivers. Female participation has never gone above 5%. And you can only race 2 years in F1 Academy. That means we have to find the next generation and give them the opportunity.
As you say, you mentioned the word exposure a lot. With exposure comes momentum. And do you feel you've already got more momentum in 2024 than you had last year?
We absolutely do, but I'm a very ambitious person and I want to go even bigger and better in Miami. And I think the plans that we have will allow that. But I don't rest on my laurels. I don't sit back and think, oh, great, you know, we've delivered. I need to get to the point that all 10 F1 teams at the end of this year say, we love F1 Academy. It gives us ROI and it's doing a good impact for the sport as a whole. And until I've got to that point, I'm pushing 100%.
Susie, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Abby Pulling didn't quite do it in terms of raw pace this weekend, but she inherited the second race win.
Exactly. At the end of the year, you look back on the standings and the tables, and 25 points is 25 points. For sure, you know, she'll know she wasn't quite there on pure pace to beat Dorian, but to be close enough there, to be in grass, whatever the penalty may be, she there was there, did the job, finished the race, and inherits P1. I think, you know, it's great to have F1 Academy on board now in for the Formula One calendar, and to start here in Jeddah was amazing. You know, in a statement piece, they're heading to Miami next. Circuits that I'm so jealous of driving around, but it was a really great, you know, Abby being a part of our academy now for a couple of years, and her doing great things for us as well. So I look forward to seeing how the rest of their season pans out.
They put a great show. They gave it all. They were fighting, you know, like there was no tomorrow. It was really nice to watch. And we'll see, you know, we'll see how they develop and just see how they adapt to these new tracks like Miami. And it's just fantastic to watch, especially how much action there was. And from our point of view, Tina did very well, especially in the first race. Then she had a problem in the second. But it's just incredible the fights we saw. But it was good. It was just like proper racing.
Yeah, I think Dorian confirmed. When she was announced as a Prema driver, supported by Mercedes, she's been racing in the WEC. She's done a lot of endurance. Just I think this year she's switched more into single seaters. But she's always been with good teams, and I think that always helps. Prema's a very good team at teaching the drivers, not just giving them a great car, but also teaching the drivers. And I think that somehow has helped Dorian. She was with the team also in endurance last year. So she's probably the most experienced out of all of them. And I think she proved that today. I mean, yesterday she basically did a Verstappen in F1 Academy. She took everything, both poles, led all the laps, fastest laps, wasn't really under threat. And she sets the benchmark now. Hopefully the others can catch up. Maya is quite good experience. She's somewhat making a step back from Formula Regional. This is a Formula 4 car, so it's a little bit of a step back. I think at some point she will be more in the fight. Abby, she's got the experience in Miami from W Series, and that can help next race. And I was surprised by Leah Block, Ken's daughter, because it's such a big switch for her. And she's just starting her career in a track, you know, in a Formula car. And she delivered in the second race. There was plenty of incidents. She had a crash when they came back. She probably had fresher tires, a bent suspension at the front. And I think father would be very proud.
F1 Academy is back out, as you say, at the Miami Grand Prix next month. Well, that's it from Jeddah. Thank you guys very much for your time. To Jack, to Pedro, to Diego, thank you. I'll be seeing you all in Melbourne in 2 weeks' time. Jack, I think you're about to get on a plane literally now to head off home?
To the homeland, to Down Under, to 16 hours away. So I'm sure even though if you guys are flying tomorrow, you'll be home before me. But I will be midair for quite some time.
And Jack, can we have an F1 Nation reunion in the pit lane when you're in that Benetton?
Yes.
Perhaps a team photo.
For sure. You know, with the crew.
You said you were doing a 25-minute session, yeah?
25-minute sole practice session.
Maybe there's time for a few laps from the from the Barcelona Bullet.
You won't get out.
Maybe if you can literally scrape me from out of that cockpit, because okay. I'll be there hiding my belt as you were, and then dropping the clutch, and yeah. You won't be able to catch me.
For our Australian Grand Prix preview next Monday, please send in your questions about the season so far to our email address, f1nation@f1.com. But for now, thank you very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.
Formula One is the greatest sport in the world.
But there can be a lot to understand. Don't worry, we're here to help.
I'm Katie Osborne. This is Christian Hugill.
And welcome to F1 Explains.
This is the official F1 podcast about how the sport really works. The drivers, the cars, the rules, the words, the risk takers, late breakers, and history makers that amaze and inspire us every race weekend.
Hit like, follow, or subscribe for new episodes every Friday as we answer your questions about F1 with the help of some very special guests. Oscar Piastri, welcome for your debut on F1 Explains.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Double world champion Mika Häkkinen, welcome to F1 Explains.
Mika, what are you doing, man? what are you doing?
By your side, a woman whose race strategy once made Sergio Perez cry.
Speechless, guys.
It's important for me to say tears of joy. Welcome back, Bernie Collins.
Thank you so much. You've just not heard the crying ones from losing the race.
Susie Wolf joining us here on F1 Explains. What a joy to have you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining me, Christian Hugill and Katie Osborne on the stage is Formula One legend David Coulthard.
We'll be here across the 2024 season with current drivers and legends of the sport.
Plus, insights and explanations from people you don't usually get to hear from, the unseen experts who are essential to Formula One.
We need your question to put to our experts.
Are you F1 Explains?
We are.
I love your podcast.
Love F1 Explains. Christian Hugill.
Oh my God.
And Katie Osborne.
Katie Osborne!
Recorded as a voice note on your phone, or you can write it in an email and send it to f1explains@f1.com.
Just search for F1 Explains wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll speak to you soon.